Where does it go? Where does it go? All of that cast off junk, where does it go? Welcome to Where Does It Go? I'm so glad to be back. I am Sarah.
I'm Emily.
And today, Emily, I'm going to tell you about the circular economy, which is one of my new favorite things to think about because I've really been going through it and I need some hope. And I think some of y'all do too. And so hopefully this is going to be informative and positive because that's what I need. Maybe you need it too. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. So in this episode, I'm going to be talking about the circular economy, what it is, design as it relates to circular economy. I'm going to give you, we're going to talk a little bit about reuse, and Emily's going to tell us about a cool project that she has. I'm going to give you some company models and examples of circular economy that already exist and will maybe make you feel happier. I don't know. Or maybe make you be like, oh, yeah, people care. People still care. Yes, we do.
Yes, definitely.
So, Emily, do you know much about the circular economy as a theory, as an economic model?
Nope, I don't.
Okay.
Or at least not under that name.
This will be fun. Okay, so the circular economy, and it might be called a few different things. So it's an economic model, just like capitalism, and is in opposition to the linear economy. So the economy that we have right now is called the linear economy. And the reason for that is that we basically make things, we extract resources from our beautiful planet. We make them, we throw them away. It's a line. It goes, you know, it's like when Jim Gaffigan talks about Pop-Tarts, he's like, open box, open bag, insert directly into toilet. It's kind of like that. It's just like things are made to be wasted and thrown away. So the circular economy is like, you know what? We don't have enough planet for that. Y'all, we need to think about this. And I know, so I love people like Greta Thunberg. She's a freaking amazing. Is she a millennial? Freaking amazing young woman.
No, she's Gen Z.
She's a freaking amazing Gen Z activist who's got a bunch of people behind her. And she's a proponent of circular economy kind of stuff. Extinction Rebellion. They are all people who are like, you know what? We need to restructure the way that we have an economy so that we have a planet left. I'm here for it. I love the kids these days. I'm not going to complain about them. I think they're amazing people dealing with a lot of crap that the older people didn't take care of or don't care to. So the I went to rethinkglobal.com. I've been listening to Catherine Wheatman's podcast on the circular economy. It's amazing. I totally suggest it. And on her website, rethinkglobal.com, there's a few things I'm just going to quote just very liberally from it right now. It says that we extract 100 billion tons of natural resources every year to make what we consume, to make the goods that we need. That's more than 12 tons for every person on the planet. And this is projected to double by 2050. So the population of the planet is projected to be about 10 billion people in 2050. The systems we have now are shockingly wasteful. And we all know this. We're all aware of this. We all know that, you know, plastic's not going anywhere. We feel like we're lied to, like we're supposedly supposed to have been recycling them the whole time and they're just going into waste. So we call that the throughput economy or waste economy. It's trashing our planet. We all know this. We all know we need something different, but we're not going to individually choice our way out of this. We know this. So what do we do? The circular economy is a great way to start thinking about what we want the future to look like. And it's totally possible and it's already happening. So But if we keep using the resources the way we are now, we're going to need like two planets, and we just don't, we only have one. And I like living here. It's where all my favorite people are. So, you know, let's start thinking about this a little bit more. So the problem with this model, if you're not familiar, is that our planet is a finite system. Like I said, we only have one planet, and we're currently only able to live on this planet. Maybe Elon Musk will go live on Mars. Hopefully he does. And he'll maybe bring some people with him. But for regular
people, can I pop for a second?
Yeah.
So, and you mentioned we only have one Earth, and like Elon Musk wants to go to Mars. There's a there's an author named Sim Kern who did a phenomenal thread on why the thought of going to Mars and colonizing it is basically impossible with our current sort of abilities, and why it's impossible. And a lot of it has to do with the like severe impacts to humans trying to travel to Mars and the sort of the experience of that sustained space travel. And so I'll link that in our show notes. They're also an excellent author. So it's just like, we're not going anywhere. We're not colonizing another planet. This is what we have, to reinforce what Sarah's about to say about like why we need to stop just throwing things away.
Yeah. So thank you very much. That's awesome. I was kind of being silly with it because, you know, it often feels like all the ultra wealthy people like Elon Musk are just like gonna jet out as soon as they can. They're like, we've trashed this place, let's go. That's what it feels like to me. I don't know if it feels like that to anyone else. Like, just generally, like, not interested. A lot of them aren't. But because we're projected to be 10 billion people by 2050, we also want those people to, we want to be able to raise those people out of poverty. We want them to have access to education, sanitation, potable water. We want them to be able to eat. This is humanitarian. They are our cousins. You know, we want everyone to be able to have a good life. I think that's like a really great goal to like want to bring a bunch of people out of poverty. The problem with that is that we have an extractive economy. So it would be an incredible drain on our planet. Again, we only have one. If everyone had cars and everyone was eating, you know, beef, everyone was having Wagyu beef. Like, we want this planet to be able to support us and the ecosystems and have pretty trees to look at, you know? So the circular economy aims to be regenerative and productive for all, including the ecosystems and the inhabitants in them. And I love that. So there are lots of exciting businesses and companies that already exist based on circularity. And they're namely, their goal is to reinvest all of their profit back into their communities and into the business instead of to shareholders whose main goal is just to make money. So it's looking to be a circle, circular economy. It's taking resources from the community and putting it back into the community, and only taking the profit so that, you know, that you can get a living wage for your workers, and you can also have, you know, a nice place to live, like putting it all back. So I'm going to give you some examples. So Catherine Wheatman, she wrote this great book called The Circular Economy Can Book, and she built on the work of a bunch of other people. This is not a new idea, but there are four strategies that she has set out for what a circular economy looks like. So the first strategy is, and I lost where I was, okay. The first strategy is slow the flow. So slow the flow means that we will use the product or materials for a longer time. So things are gonna, we're gonna use products in a way that They're number one, they're built out of better materials. They're built out of materials that are sustainable. They're built out of materials that we can again break down and reuse. We want to intensify the loop. We want people to use things longer. We want people to be able to share resources like cars, like doing like laundromats. We just want things to be shared so that, if you have a car and you never drive it, why do you have a car? But, we live in, especially where I live, you have to have a car. Our mass transit is trash here. So
Yeah,
you
I don't
have to.
even know how I would get to a bus stop to take a bus.
Exactly. And that's a huge problem everywhere. So we have and I drive all the time. I don't like it, but I have to. But for people who just, are home all day working from home, why do they need a car? Like they're not using their car 90% of the time. So it's making ideas like reuse, zip car, renting cars, making cars or things like so that you can actually share them with your neighbors and pay for a subscription or whatever, and share it with other people instead of having to both have that cost and having to own that material when other people could be using it. So there's a lot of ideas out there for that. The car thing is, it's a hard one, but when you have things that you are intensifying the loop on and companies are making money from subscriptions, they're going to be invested in keeping those in good order. They're going to be
Right.
wanting to keep them drivable in the case of a car, make them out of better materials so that they're fixable. And this is really what's behind Intensify the Loop. The third key that she brought out was recover and regenerate. We need to close the loop, she says, by recovering products. So packaging is an issue. So why don't we make packaging out of stuff that is compostable? And there is some stuff out there, but by and large, the plastic that stuff is wrapped in is not recoverable. You just throw it directly in the trash and it stays there for, I don't know, till the death of the sun. We don't know. So the goal is this, is to close a loop, to make recoverable products so that in case you need to break it apart and remake it into something else, the components themselves are usable, that you actually have components like, I'm going to say cell phones. What if you make them better so that you can actually break them apart and make a new thing totally? Remanufactured engines for cars, etc. Just recover and regenerate what we have now and make it out of stuff that we can recover and regenerate instead of like little thin films of plastic. Then, of course, there's narrowing the loop. That's the last key that she has. And so that's reducing the material that we use, reducing the energy that we use to make it, and reducing the water because we're running out of fresh water. And any other resources we might need at the systemic level. So this all gets into design, which is my next topic. So there are really cool designers, and a lot of them are younger, but plenty of them are older people like me, who want to design products to stay out of waste streams or redesign the product so they can go into compost. They can regenerate our soil. We can start working on regenerating our arable land so that we can feed everyone, so that we're not taking and taking and taking out of this, like thin film of soil that we are exhausting over the planet. And a lot of these ideas are really exciting. So if you know me a little bit, you follow me on social media, you know I'm completely in love with mushrooms. I think they're super
Yeah.
cool. So there's a lot of work out there right now to find packaging made out of fungus to grow packaging out of, like make plastics out of stuff that, is compostable, to make buildings, building materials out of mushroom kind of polymer stuff. It's really cool. And I totally suggest looking it up. And we could go for 7 centuries talking about this because it's awesome. So I used e-waste and I used cell phones as an example earlier, and this brought up a lot. We throw a lot of e-waste out because we're all obsessed with our gadgets now. They're fun, they're cool. But a lot of companies right now, and we have a place here called Triangle E-Cycling, that kind of work to redesign electronic gadgets. Triangle E-Cycling actually recycles it and try to make them repairable by other people, resell them. But there is a push to redesign electronic gadgets out of components so that you and I could repair them. No more iPhones where you have to send it in because you can't change the battery yourself. So instead of throwing non-functional electronics away, there's a big push on refurbish so that you have that value. Like, you don't get rid of that value and you want a new cell phone for whatever reason. So someone else can use it. It's fixable by a third party, and it's not thrown away. And I think that's amazing. And there's already pushes out there to do that. You can buy so many refurbished cell phones now. There's a bunch of like companies out there that just refurbish, and you can buy a great cell phone, and you don't have to extract it. That lithium battery didn't have to go, into toxic waste, basically.
Exactly. And it also plays into not participating as much in geopolitical manipulation.
Yeah, that's another
Because a lot of
huge
these
point.
finite resources end up coming from places. What did Elon Musk say in a tweet once? Somebody was pointing out that a material for something he makes primarily comes from Bolivia, and if they and what are they going to perform a coup to make sure that they get what they need from Bolivia, an autonomous or an ostensibly autonomous governing country. And he said, we'll coup whoever we want.
Yeah, that's.
So you also don't end up participating as strongly in cooing whoever we want.
That's an excellent point, Emily. And the circular economy, I think there's a lot of people who have said this is not fair. The way that we have it now is not fair for the poorest people in the world. It is, there's coups. Geopolitically, there are a lot of horrible things going on in our world, just because people want to get in the richer countries, want to get richer, and they will manipulate the bottom third of the planet in order to continue making money. And that's a good point, with Elon Musk's tweet. And sadly, it's how a lot of the thinking is that these resources are here to extract, and we need to be able to control them. And by control, the way to control them is to control the politics of that region, no matter how badly it turns out for the poor people there. So the circular economy is aiming to rethink the way that we interact with the poorest of our world so that they can actually come up, that it can actually have, like I said earlier, sanitation. It's a huge issue. We take it for granted here, but it's a huge issue in third world countries or smaller countries. Places like Haiti, they have problems with cholera because they don't have good sanitation, and we really take it for granted here. And I would love to see an aim and a push so that we have a global economy so that all of us can come up, all of us can live good lives. And that's the aim of the circular economy. And there's a lot of really smart people out there talking about this and saying, you know what, the way that we're doing it now is really shitty, and we really need to rethink a lot of this. And it's amazing. I totally suggest you guys look this up because it gave me a ton of hope. So we're going to go into reuse because I love reuse. It's like one of my favorite things. I'm a mixed media artist. I love going to a place we have here called Scrap Exchange, getting weird stuff and remaking art out of it. Emily, you make rag rugs. I'd love for you to talk about rag rugs and what they are.
Sure. So I really enjoy sewing and fabric and stuff like that. And then, I, like any other household, have bed sheets and pillowcases and stuff that wear out, or like clothes that wear out, or things like that. And I was like, I don't just want to throw these things away. And having cleaning rags, there's only so many cleaning rags any one person can need, and there's only certain fabrics that really work for cleaning rags. So I looked at making rag rugs, and there's a few different kinds of rag rugs you can make, and some are sort of a freehand where you say braid together strips of fabric and sew them, or there's a type of braided rag rug that's made primarily with knit fabric, so there's some stretch to them. I don't remember the name of those, but I've wanted to make one. They're really cool, but I don't have a ton of knit fabric right now. And then the last kind that I came across was a loomed rag rug. So it's a rag rug built on a loom. And there's a style called a twined rag rug, which is it's really easy to make on a loom. And so I found a loom maker in the United States via Etsy and bought one of their twined rag rug loops. I'd never made a rug before. I do make a lot of things, but I'm one of those people that will dive into something and do my best. And thankfully, rag rugs kind of stuck. And I actually hung the loom on my wall because it's easier to stand and like do looming work while I'm watching TV. It's easier on my back too, versus sitting. But some people prefer to sit and they have the loom sort of propped up on their lap. And it's really simple. It's a set of nails on the top and the bottom, and then these rigid metal rods that go on the sides to make sure that your rug is truly rectangular or square. And some people say don't use knit fabrics for this kind of rug. I do, but I've used old sheets, old clothes. I'm making one right now that involves some scrap fabric, an old bridesmaid's dress, three old pillowcases. I think that's it for that one. I've made Sarah a rag rug.
I know, it's awesome.
I know sheets went into that one, but I don't remember what else went into it. But it's a great way to use up fabric that is functional, because these are nice rugs. They're very comfy on your feet. They've got sort of a nice, like, they got a nice texture to them, so it feels nice on your feet. It's sort of a little massagey. They can be fairly large, and then I don't have to pay for a rug, which is kind of cool. So I'm using up the clothes instead of throwing them away or donating them, which does contribute to a circular economy because other people might want them. But we got a lot of clothes in this
Yeah.
world. There are a lot of clothes nobody needs or wants, and especially worn out clothes, clothes that aren't in good condition. Nobody needs my pilly old knit tank tops because they've got nail polish on them, or they're covered in pills because fabric doesn't launder in the same way because the circular economy doesn't go into a lot of garment manufacture. And so the fabric doesn't hold up to washing, and then you're supposed to just get a new shirt. And I did get new shirts that are better at standing up to washing, but I also use these shirts, and then I don't have to buy rugs. I do have to make them, but I make them when I'm like watching TV or hanging out with my kid. It's not a huge amount of input of my time that's not being used other ways.
Yeah, it's so awesome. And the It's great you mentioned this because I wanted to go into fashion. So fashion is a hard one for me because I freaking love clothes. Like I have this thing. Yeah, I've always been this way. I love clothes, but I also understand that clothing itself is a major contributor to pollution. It's like up there with fossil fuels. I'm not even kidding, and how much pollution it creates. And all of these clothes are going into landfill. And when we go back to the clothes that we don't want to use, that can't be thrifted because they got nail polish or breast milk or whatever on them. They're just, we're human, we use things. And so when we can reuse, when we can keep that out of the waste stream, it's amazing. And I love this project, Emily, because I feel like that is exactly what we want to do. So if you have things like, I use a lot of old pots. Like if I get them from the store because they had a plant in them, I keep them. I use cups. I use tubs for like my Earth Balance butter. Like I use the tub to start plants in. Like I'm trying to keep stuff out of the waste stream myself. And like I said, we can't individually choice just by ourselves our way into a better economy. It is a great start. However, there are micro factories out there now that like specifically are mining or taking waste like plastics, metals, glass in places like Bangladesh, Pakistan, Australia, that are reusing these pieces and remaking them into other stuff, and they are supporting the community around them as well. So these micro factories is what they're called. They may be making like recycled plastic stuff out of, just waste stream plastic. And their aim is to support the communities, to provide a living wage, and to make things people want, and to take stuff out of the waste stream. Just like, you're doing, and that you're trying to slow the flow of that waste. You're trying to close the loop on those clothes and actually make something. And I have a rug from you. It's amazing. It's completely washable. It's a great rug. I use it in my kitchen. It's great to stand on. And just little stuff like that sort absolutely helps slow the flow into the waste stream. It's fun to do. It gives you something to do. And also, it inspires micro factories kind of stuff. It inspires other people to reuse. And I love it. And I'm glad you mentioned fashion because it's a big thing. A lot of people are behind trying to make fashion a little bit more sustainable, a lot of bit more sustainable. Instead of having seasons of clothes, maybe have better made clothes and not have to have these crazy fashion seasons where everything you own is suddenly out of style. So there's this great company that I wanted to point out because it's only in the UK. I would love to see it come here. It is actually an app that was created so that it connects customers to local tailors, seamsters, repair shops, so that you don't have to like throw away your clothes that you love, kind of closing that loop. And they will actually come to you. They will pick up your clothes, they will fix them, and then bring them back. So this app is called Sojo. So if you're in the UK, look it up. It's sojo.uk. And they're just a team of people that are trying to bring more repair to clothes, saying, hey, you can repair the clothes you have now. You don't have to buy new clothes. Just repair them, tailor them so that they're different. And we will help you find a person to do that, which I think is amazing. It connects local businesses and supports the community, and also tries to keep some of that fashion waste out of the stream. So that book ended really nicely with that. Thank you.
Fabulous. You're welcome.
And then here's another company, Lush. You guys are probably familiar with Lush.
I am.
Yeah, so I totally love Lush. Lush's whole thing. They have, if you've ever been into a Lush cosmetic store, they have a lot of like stuff that is just open. They don't have a lot of plastic packaging. When they do, they're like these really nice little plastic pots. They actually will take them back. You can get money back for returning them to them because they totally try to reuse them. And everywhere in their process, they try to have more sustainable practices. They strive to provide living wages to their producers, to their partners. They don't wrap things, like I said. They actually source the bottles that they use so that they're very reusable. And so that I'm a big fan of Lush for that reason. And they're a tiny bit more expensive, I think. But when you think about all the plastic that you are not using, I mean, it's worth it to me.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's this cool business called TerraCycle I wanted to talk about too. And I'm not going to go into like huge depth about like I only chose like three businesses really to talk about because I mean this is a rabbit hole. There are seriously a lot of them, and that makes me so deeply happy. TerraCycle is cool. I looked them up last night because I was not into, I've heard about them, but I was not entirely sure what they're doing. So TerraCycle aims to recycle things that cannot be recycled in the municipal recycling services. They will recycle cigarette butts, toys, mascara wands, plastic wrappers from candy bars. Like you name it, they're trying to recycle it. If you
Wow.
go to their website, you can order a box for your business for non-recyclable stuff. Fill the box, send it to them, they'll recycle it. I think that's really cool and it's a good step. They also have a TerraCycle has a platform called Loop. And Loop itself is they collaborate with brands and big retailers to actually make refillable versions of conventional single-use products. I didn't know this existed. I think it's really cool, and I think it's a step in an awesome direction. They work with all kinds of retailers and restaurants, and they're like, "Hey, you know, your coffee pod, your shampoo bottle, they're not reusable. Let's make them reusable. Let's think of a way to make these things reusable." I love this. I think it's a step in the right direction. Oh, that's thunder.
It's storming pretty hard up here too.
Yeah. And it makes me happy that they're all thinking about this. And then when we go into individual choice, and it's kind of hard as an individual to find stuff that's reusable totally. Like I've looked, and the only thing I could find locally for me is like going to the store, going to Whole Foods, and I can buy nuts in a reusable container. That's like my, you know, that's like my choice. It's like I can go to the big bins of stuff and refill stuff. I have been to a friend of mine lives in Evansville, Indiana, and they have a really cool store there called Zero, and they're becoming more common where you can actually bring a container and like buy shampoo there. Like you just fill your container of shampoo. I think it's amazing. And I kind of want to open my own store called Circles and do this too. I have all these dreams. I'm gonna be a meditation yogi massage therapist that owns a store called Circles that has refillable versions of all the things that you possibly could ever need. But yeah, so to wrap up, because I could talk about this for a very long time, but I think that you should look it up yourself if you're interested. There, I wrote down some resources for you if you're interested. Of course, go to rethinkglobal.com. Listen to Catherine Wheatman's podcast. It's so much fun, and she has so many people on there who are trying to close the loop, are trying to make it so that we have a planet a little bit longer. Yeah, there's some great books. Again, Catherine Wheatman's book, Circular Economy Handbook, Prosperity Without Growth by Tim Jackson. It's a great book. Post Growth, I just started reading by Tim Jackson again. Donut Economics by Kate Raworth. Less is More by Jason Hinkle. Totally check those out if you're interested. I think they're great books. I'm currently reading Post Growth. It's interesting. I started Less is More but got depressed. Not because of the book, but because, it's kind of hard sometimes in this world not to be coming out of COVID and seeing that it was entirely possible for capitalism to take a little bit of a break and then come back and then be told it can't. So there is hope. We can all get there. It's totally possible.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I love this. I want to go work on my rag rug now.
Totally. Yeah. So we are, what do we have? We have a Facebook page. Follow us on Facebook. I update it when I can. I'm trying to put more interesting stuff on there because of circular economy, and I put a lot of like native plant stuff and stuff. We don't have a Twitter anymore.
No, we do not.
Yeah, but Emily is, are you
And we're
on
supposed to have a
Instagram?
TikTok, which I have not updated.
That's fine.
Sorry.
So you can
Sarah's
follow
much
us.
better at the social media part than I am.
And it's hilarious because I don't like social media. Like I know how it works. So like I understand getting a message out is really great. But at the same time, like I have an addictive personality. So if I can scroll for flipping hours, I will. So I try to stop myself from doing that. Yeah. So we have Facebook. You can always email us at whereisitpodcast@gmail.com. Visit our website, Where Does It Podcast? Connect with us. Tell us what you think about circular economy. And I'd love to hear from you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.